Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jai Om Vishnu Spah Paramahansa Paribhujakti Charaja Astutero Sata Shri Srimad His Divine Loving Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Iskan Founder Acharya His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Anantakoti Vaishnavarinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridasa Thakur Ki Jai Prim Shri Kaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gidadhar Shri Vasudhi Gaur Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai Shri Vrinda Abandam ki jai, Sri Mayapur Dham ki jai, Yamuna Gangamai ki jai, Tosi Maharani ki jai, Samaveda Bhaktivrinda ki jai, Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Narayanam Namaskritam. Naram Chaiva Narotama Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayet Nastaprayasu Abhadrasyu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavate Utamasloke Bhakti Bhavati Vaisnaishtaki Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Vaya, it's nice to see so many devotees here today. Normally we have the recitation of the verse and then you will repeat, some of you individually, and then word for word. But I have written a lot of things I want to talk about, and I want to try to utilize as much time as possible to speak on what I've written, trying to cover everything. So I will read the verse, and then I will go directly into the translation. Te cha prita samadishta prajasarge drita vratha Narayana Sarojhagmur Yatta Shidhashva Purvarjaha. This is the translation. In accordance with their father's orders to beget children, the second group of sons also went to Narayana Sashra, the same place where their brothers had previously attained perfection by following the instructions of Narada. Undertaking great vows of austerity, the Shvala Vashyas remained at that holy place. So this is again continuation of Prajapati Daksha, and how he begot so many children. Prajapati Daksha sent his second group of sons to the same place where his previous sons had attained perfection. He did not hesitate to send his second group of sons to the same place. Although they too might become victims of Narada's instructions. According to the Vedic culture, one should be trained in spiritual understanding as a brahmachari. before entering household life to beget children. This is the Vedic system. Thus, Prajapati Daksha sent his second group of sons for cultural improvement, despite the risk that because of the instructions of Narada, they might become as intelligent as their older brothers. As a dutiful father, he did not hesitate to to allow his sons to receive cultural instructions concerning the perfections of life. He depended upon them to choose whether to return home back to Godhead or to rot in this material world in various species of life. In all circumstances, the duty of the father is to give cultural education to his sons, who must later decide which way to go. Responsible fathers should not hinder their sons who are making cultural advancement in association with Krishna conscious movement. This is not a father's duty. The duty of a father is to give his sons complete freedom to make his choice after become spiritually advanced. Freedom to make his choice after becoming spiritually advanced by following the instructions of the spiritual master. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamani Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Desatarane. So Daksha, even though he knew that the final choice as to what path his second batch of sons would take was ultimately up to them, he was hoping that they would take his advice and begin to populate the earth. But knowing quite well the influences of Narada could have his own sons change their minds again, he was willing to take this chance and still, out of duty, he left this decision up to his sons. So, we know that Daksha means expert. And being called Prajapati Daksha, what was he expert in? Begetting progeny or children. So most men, whether here or in the world in general, will boast at their abilities or their sexual prowess, you know, mostly to impress themselves, but Daksha was able to beget 10,000 children. Who is capable of doing this? This is not very possible in this day and age. Not only were the Prajapatis responsible for begetting humans, but also all species of life, from the aquatics, insects, birds, beasts, reptiles, and in this human form also. So this reminds me of things that I have felt important and noted down. And this is a verse from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Sariyam yad avnopti yachapi ukaram astvaha grihit vatani samyate varu gandham ivashyate. So the translation to this is that the living entity in the material world carries different conceptions of life from one body to another as the air carries aromas. So, using this analogy of a breeze, so in the same sense, this breeze can carry the fragrance of roses, and at the same time, it can carry the stench of stool, but it is passing by. In the same way, the soul can pass out of this material world and live for eternity in the spiritual world, or choose to remain here in this material world where they must suffer in who knows in what type of body. Now, we know there are 8,400,000 species of life, and we have gone through once, twice, maybe millions of times, all of these varieties of life, and we have been suffering. We have been attracted by the fragrance of the stool. So, what are we doing wrong? So our minds, they are always identifying with our surroundings. And then we try to find some comfort in whatever condition of life, whatever surroundings we may find ourselves in. There are many examples, there's short analogies of this. One man was being chased by a tiger, and to escape this tiger, he came to a well. And fortunately for him, there seemed to be a rope going down into the well, so he began climbing down this rope to be freed from the clutches of this vicious tiger. But he realized that this was not a rope, but it was a venomous serpent. And so now his life was in double perils. So what could he do? He was fearing for his life by going up and being eaten by the tiger, and he was also fearing of being bitten by the snake. But just to his left, he saw that there was a hive of honeybees, and he could smell the fragrance and the sweetness of that honey. And hanging there for his dear life, his mind began thinking that if I had a stick, I could reach and get some of that honey, and I could enjoy the nectar, the sweetness of this honey. So we find that this is our consciousness here in the material world. We are suffering. We are undergoing so many, inconveniences. But still, we still try to find pleasure in whatever condition of life we may find ourselves in. Now, summer is coming, and soon it will be extremely hot. Some of us who stay here year-round, we may be fortunate and have a nice air conditioner. We can go to our rooms and take comforts of that. But other creatures in Vrindavan, they have no escape for getting away from the heat. So you can see, like just in front of the temple where I live in the MVT, there's all of these dogs. They live there year-round. And what do they do in summer? Or They go and they immerse themselves into this sewage drainage, which is foul-smelling, black, thick, full of all kinds of unspeakable things. And they sit there with their heads out of the water thinking, oh, it's so nice in here. I'm free from this heat of the summer. And when they get out, their bodies are covered with all of this stench and all of this dirt. So that is their ignorance. And our ignorance is also that we think that somewhere in this material world, in whatever condition we find ourselves in, we are going to find happiness. It will not happen. Happiness and distress, heat and cold, these are all described as being flickering. One minute we may be very happy, and we may be very satisfied with our surroundings and the way our life is going. But in just a few seconds or even one moment, things can change. Perhaps we hear some bad news, a death, or one of our very dear close friends crosses us and causes our mind to become full of anxiety and distress. What are these? These are called adiyatmik, adibhautik, and adidaivik. These are the conditions that are imposed upon us here in the material world. And along with adiyatmik, adibhautik, and adidaivik, again, we have also the three modes of material nature which are afflicting us continuously, causing us either happiness or distress. The next canto we read is the seventh canto, which is about Prahlad Maharaj, and there's a nice verse which is 7:5:5, where Prahlad Maharaj is speaking to his father. He says, Prahlad Maharaj replied, "O best of the Asuras, king of the demons, as far as I have learned from my spiritual master," and who was Prahlad's spiritual master? Narada, yes. And how did he receive this knowledge from Narada? From within the womb, yes, of his mother. And Narada purposefully spoke this knowledge to Prahlad's mother, knowing quite well that this would be too much for her to understand. But that little boy in the womb was keen to hear, and he absorbed all of this knowledge from within the womb. How fortunate such an individual is. But he continues saying, "I have learned from my spiritual master, any person who has accepted a temporary body and temporary household life is certainly embarrassed by anxieties because of having fallen in a dark well where there is no water but only suffering." So these are not concocted words, my words. These are coming from a Mahajan. Prahlad is one of our Mahajans. "One should give up this position and go to the forest. More clearly, one should go to Vrindavan." We are here now in Vrindavan. Jai Vrindavan Dham Hari Bol. "Where Krishna conscious is prevalent, and should thus take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." So these words coming from a small boy to his very powerful father. But we know by just examining Hiranyakashipu's name, it is evident that he is a materialistic man. Hiranya meaning gold, and Kashipu meaning soft bed. So this Hiranyakashipu mentality, it affects us here. How many of you have a soft, nice bed? I know I do. I have nice foam mattress and I lay on it. It's so comfortable. And Hiranya gold. How many have gold? How many want gold? Do you want gold? If I offered you some nice gold, would you become delighted and take it? Of course, yes. I have gold. It's mine. But all of the Hiranyakashipus who are exhibiting those traits within this material world, they are doomed to unhappiness because there is no pleasure in these things. It will only bring disappointment. These are the behaviors of animals, and there will never be any true happiness if we only engage in these types of activities. But on the other hand, we analyze Prahlad Maharaja's name, and it is completely contrary or opposite from his father's. What does Prahlad Maharaja's name mean? Aladha means what? Pleasure. So Prahlada, he has pleasure. Where does he derive his pleasure? Not like his father. Jai Shri Shri Gornitai, Jai Shri Krishna Balaram, Jai Shri Shri Radha Shama Sundar. So his pleasure does not come from the activities like his father. His pleasure comes from associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We know that when Prahlad was a very young boy, he instructed his fellow classmates that how life is very short and how much of their life is spent as a child in frivolous games and then in pursuit of knowledge and then in the cultivation of a family relationship with society, wife, children, and then dwindling, and then perhaps at the very last stage of one's life, they will dedicate some moments to thinking of God because out of fear, oh yes, now it's time. God, please protect me, save me. No, he's telling them from the very beginning of their lives, you can get this happiness by taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Narada, he didn't want these boys to follow in the footsteps of Hiranyakashipu. He subtly instructed them and encouraged them to follow the path of Prahlad Maharaj. So we have to learn how to change our lives and escape from the clutches and the entanglement and elevate ourselves to the platform of ultimate pleasure. What is your ultimate pleasure? A big plate of prasadam? No? What is your ultimate pleasure? Yes. Well, ultimately that is our ultimate pleasure. We are striving to be able to experience that ultimate pleasure. So we are endeavoring. So that's true. Real pleasure is described as ananta. What does ananta mean? That has no end. So we want that ananta. We want that pleasure that is unending. And it will remain with us for eternity and continue to give us this wonderful exhilarating satisfaction. Not like the pleasures that we receive here in this material world, which are all fleeting. It's coming, it's going, we find pleasure. Just like with food, everyone gets hungry. And if I offer you a sumptuous feast, your hunger and that desire to eat, oh, it can be satiated, satisfied. But you cannot continue eating. You will eventually become full and no more. It doesn't matter how palatable the dishes are in front of you. You will say, I've had enough. I've had enough. But what's going on here? The mind is still not satisfied. My belly is full, but I'm still hankering for satisfaction. So I will look elsewhere for this pleasure. And we are looking in the wrong places. We are looking through all of these material objects. What is the nature of matter? Matter means that it changes. It is not a permanent thing. So we should be reading these Vedic literatures like Srimad Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavad Gita, and so many Vedic literatures which give us insight into that which is eternal. Krishna tells us in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Bhuta Janamaste Gyanamam Prajate Vasudeva Sarvamiti Sabmahatma Sula Dulab. So what does this mean? That Bahunam Janmanamante Ginangana Prajate Vasudevam Sarvamiti Sabmahatma Sula Dulab. So this means that after many, many births and deaths, he who is in actual knowledge will surrender unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. So how rare is that soul? Someone that reaches this stage of life in this material world, out of billions of living entities, and of all of them, only one will surrender to Krishna. So we are all here. We are definitely striving to be that one. But even amongst all of us in the garbs of devotees with tilak on our heads and chanting daily the Maha Mantra, perhaps one of us will become successful. And who is amongst all of us here that one going to be? Will you be that one? Don't say no. You should be affirmative. Yes, I will. Because by your determination only, and you're resolute to follow the instructions of what? Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, will you become successful? Right? So we have all the necessary facilities compiled here in this book, here in this temple. And if we want to be that one successful person, we must adhere strictly, without deviation, to everything that is given to us here. We know that by reading these books, we find characters that from their very birth, like Prahlad Maharaj, like Bharat Maharaj, like the Yudhisthiras and the Pandavas, were always devotees. But then we find others who were sinful, debauched, but by association, by the mercy of the Lord, like Jughai and Madai, they also became perfect and went back home, back to Godhead. It's described in the Vishnu Puranas, Ekadashashtitashyagnir Jyotasan Vishtarani Yata Pranasya Brahmana Shaktish Tathadena Akilam Jagat. So, Jagat Akilam. What does this mean? Jagat is nothing but a manifestation of Krishna's energy. We may be Brahman or spirit and also eternal, but Krishna is the Param Brahman. This means the Supreme Spirit, and there is nothing beyond Him. So, if we are looking for this ultimate truth, we must search out that person who is this Param Brahman. And now we are on this quest, searching here, searching there, and hopefully we will find. But unfortunately, we have been identifying with this matter or this material world for as long as we can imagine, that we have forgotten who we really are. All we know is what we see here in this material world. But now it is time to become free from this illusion. So now we need to obtain mukti, or freedom from this false identity, this thinking that I am this body and I belong here in this material world. And identifying everything with what is here in this material world as being real. So, unrelated to our shastras, but sometimes wisdom you must take from even a polluted place. But I remember from years ago studying some Greek writings, there was either Socrates or Plato had an allegory of the cave. How many know this allegory? So he was teaching to his students, and he wanted to express this very concept, although he had no knowledge of God, but his allegory was very appropriate. He said, suppose a man was born in a cave, and from his very birth in that cave, he was chained to a chair facing the wall of the cave. And behind him was the mouth of the cave where some light came in, and then some distance into the cave there was a smaller wall built with a fire burning. And as any object walked past the mouth of the cave, that would create a shadow on the wall of the cave. And so, if this is all this person has ever seen, what is he to believe? He is to believe that that is real. And so, that applies to us here. All we see is what we can visualize with our eyes here. We have not experienced that which exists in the spiritual world. Prabhupada has always described, and also in the Shastras it's described, that this material world is a perverted reflection, just like the shadow. The shadow is there But it is representing something real that is outside the cave. And here in this material world, we are seeing variegated activities. All things that are here in the material world, they exist in the spiritual world just as they are. But what is the difference? Everything material here will go through transformations, deterioration, and eventually it will be consumed again back into the elements of this material world. But those objects, those entities, they are fully cognizant, and they are eternal, and they are full of bliss, and they are full of knowledge in the spiritual world. So this vision that we have, the material world, we have to learn to turn our heads and see in the other direction and see the spiritual world and learn how we can associate with that spiritual world even while we're here in these material bodies. We have pains and pleasures of our material bodies, but we have to overcome these. And we must learn not to be attached to objects in this material world. So how many would agree that it is very difficult to break oneself free from the clutches of Maya? Who would say that it's very difficult to break free from Maya? Has Maya got control of you? Is she holding on to you? Is she holding on to you? So let me tell you a short story. There was a king, and he was holding court, just as we are here today. And this one sage, his name was Ashtikamuni. Ashtikamuni means one who is bent in seven places. So he was walking like this, and he happened upon this assembly where the king was holding court and came in. And all of the people there, they began to laugh at him. Oh, ha, ha, look at you, you're so funny looking. But the king was wise, and he saw in this deformed man wisdom. And he asked him, and he begged his subjects to stop their ridicule of this king, this mendicant. And he asked him with folded hands, my dear sir, may I please inquire from you to obtain some knowledge? And Ashtikamuni looked at the king. He says, if you want to receive instructions from me, first, you get down from the throne you're sitting on. You come sit there, and I will sit on the throne. Then you will become qualified to ask me questions. So the king agreed. They exchanged places. And this very same question I posed to you, how to become free from the clutches of Maya. The king asked him, my dear Muni, Maya is very strong, and she is holding so tightly onto all living entities. How can we free ourselves from her clutches? And so Ashtikamuni sat for a moment, and then he got up from the throne, and he walked in his unnormal gait over to a tree that was in the courtyard like we have here. And he looked at the tree, and then he jumped up and wrapped his arms and his legs around the tree, and he was holding on to the tree for dear life, saying, let go of me, let go of me. So the tree is Maya. The tree is the material energy. The tree is just there, but who is hanging on to the tree? It is you. It is me. So we are the ones. No, this has nothing. It is an inanimate object. But I see it. I become attached to it. I want to possess it, and I clutch it very tightly. And if you try to take it away from me, there will be trouble. So don't think that Maya is causing our suffering. Our suffering is coming because we are too much attached to all of this phantasmagoria that exists here in this material world. So not until we have released ourselves from the attachment to all of these material objects and grasped hold of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, will we be safe. And only then, after we have realized this, we will become happy. So we are pleasure-seeking entities. And where can pleasure only exist? Between two eternal objects. Krishna is eternal. And we are also eternal. But our pleasure, our happiness that we derive from objects here in the material world is fleeting. We have all had someone that we love, and perhaps they die, or they break our hearts. We've had an object which we are very attached to, like now the big thing is smartphones. Everyone, how many got a smartphone in this room here? Yeah? And how many of you are spending half of your day on the smartphone, checking email, doing this? Oh, yes, mine. And then if suddenly your smartphone goes on the blink, or someone steals your smartphone, oh, you're in complete anxiety. Oh, this material object has caused me distress. It gave me happiness, but now it's causing me distress. So don't be caught up in this illusion of this. Because life will pass us by, and all of these temporary things will come and go. Bhagavad Gita says, Dihinojmin yatadehi kumarayovanam jara tatatihantra prapris driratatiyamunyate. So we are passing from boyhood to youth. I see many young boys here. I see older, and I see even older. Now, when I joined ISKCON, I was a young boy, only 18 years old. Now, I'm 68 years old. So my body has gone through these changes. And what is the next change of? It is either to change from this body into another body, which I certainly don't want, but unless I become firmly convinced, fixed, and follow implicitly the instructions of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, I will be born again. And who wants to take another birth in this material world? How about you? You're ready for a new birth? You have gone through the stages of being a baby, potty trained, and learning to walk, crawl, and then being able to speak, and now you have a mature body with intellect. But you lose that and start again with poop in your pants. Right? What a way to live eternity. No. Or you can leave this material world. and go back home and romp through the fields and play with a beautiful blue boy.
Thank you.
So if anyone has a question... Yes. Oh, there's the microphone here. He was, if you read in the previous verses and in the introduction that Srila Prabhupada has given us kindly to all new chapters, he was quite aware of this. But because he was a dutiful follower of the regulative principles and the behavior that must be followed by all civilized humans, he was willing to take that chance. If his sons chose to come home and become progenitors of population, so be it. But if they were like his first sons and they decided to go to the forest, he has no control in this matter. So he was acting in accordance to the responsibilities that are imposed upon fathers. In the beginning, if you remember, it says that one should not impede their children if they wish to go on this path. Now many parents say, no, don't go, stay, get married, have children, you must do this, and you must take care of us when we're old. But, you know, if you're a young boy and you say, no, I don't want this, I want to go to the forest, right? And we've had instances of many young boys, 7 years old, going to the forest, searching for this absolute knowledge, because they were given intelligence. And Narada Muni, he did not blatantly demand that they take up spiritual life. He simply by showing them the differences between this path and this path, which one do you want to take? So if I tell you this path, it will lead you to a beautiful wife, a big house, several children, responsibilities in your society, bills, sickness, aggravation caused by wife and children, will you take this one? Or if I tell you, you go down this path and your journey may not be as easy as this path in the beginning, but that which in the beginning tastes like nectar turns to poison in the end, and that which tastes bitter in the beginning becomes so wonderful in the end. So you will go that way. Because I can see you're an intelligent boy. You will take that and undergo austerities. How did Queen Kunti pray? She prayed that, oh Krishna, we always want to be in difficulties, because when we are suffering, when we are distressed, when we are being persecuted, we have only you to take shelter of. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.